okay, I'm better now. What was I thinking as a child growing up? That if I could just be tough, that I'd get by. What was I thinking without a young soul of mine? At all alone, all by myself, that I'd be fine. I always thought I had to be so brave and strong to do my best, never do wrong, to hide my soul right next to my heart and be just like Joan of Arc. What was I thinking when I rode my horse to war, not knowing quite what? I am so good. Oh, with my sword, I can strike you down if you come too near. And with my shield, I am like a frozen man that cannot love because of fear.
It's just about 9 o'clock straight up at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where I'm obliged to tell you for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. That said, though, it's time now for Talking Animals, KUCI.
All he wants to do is fish. people.
Only once in the rich fish. Only once in the rich fish.
That's music from The Replacements with a song called All He Wants to Do is Fish, as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. And I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that's devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls here to Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. .net. Did you hear me? .net. Okay. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a nice balance, but clearly the heart of the program and every show we've broadcast is archived, by the way, on our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net, is the interview we conduct each week with an array of notable folks who inhabit some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Jean-Michel Cousteau, son of Jacques Cousteau, and an accomplished explorer, environmentalist, educator, and filmmaker in his own right. He's involved in a raft of projects and organizations, including the Ocean Future Society, the nonprofit marine conservation and education organization he founded in 1999. We'll hear all about this and more when we get into our conversation with Jean-Michel Cousteau in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements of any event or fundraiser, etc., that you might know of that we should be aware of here on Talking Animals, observations just generally, of course, any news stories you might have spotted that that we should be aware of as well. They'd all be most welcome. You can phone us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, occasionally international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And with any luck to get your comments on and discuss, we also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. All right, then, let's talk turkey, as it were. First of all, just to pick up where we left off last week, our guest last week was Michael Bell, who, again, a longtime animal activist and sort of a veteran actor, voiceover maven extraordinaire, but talking to us really about this cool project on the horizon, the Cambodian Wildlife Sanctuary, that when it comes to fruition will be the largest animal sanctuary in the world, and along those lines they've already got 1 million acres earmarked for it. You heard me, 1 million acres, that's right, folks. So, but anyways, just as recently as last Monday when we spoke to Michael, there was no website to find out more or to make donations if you were so inclined, etc. Well, now there is. So I want to give that to you. It's www.CambodiaWildlifeSanctuary.com. Not Cambodian with the N, but CambodiaWildlifeSanctuary.com. So check that out. I think they're still adding content and working on it, but it's up, it's alive and well, and there's already cool stuff to look at, and again, it just sounds like a really, really exciting project. So that's that. On a less upbeat note, by quite a stretch, saw this in yesterday's LA Times, but the story's kind of making the rounds otherwise for some period, really. Headline: Bay Area Zoo to close its elephant exhibit. I'll just start reading some of it for you. Following the death of two of their four elephants, managers of the San Francisco Zoo have decided to permanently shutter the city's aging and inadequate pachyderm exhibit. When the two remaining elephants are packed off to sanctuaries or another zoo, it will be the first time since the San Francisco Zoo opened in 1929 that visitors will not be able to witness the comings and goings of the world's largest land mammals from Africa and Asia. After facing heavy criticism from Bay Area animal rights advocates for years over the zoo's small and antiquated elephant enclosures, the issue came to a head when Maybell, a 44-year-old African elephant, unexpectedly collapsed and died April 22nd. Maybell's death followed by less than 7 weeks the demise of Callie, a 37-year-old Asian elephant who was put down by zoo officials because of her deteriorating condition. Conditions included a degenerative joint disease, a history of tuberculosis, and an old injury sustained in a highway crash in Mexico when she was a performer in a traveling circus. Elephants generally live 50 to 60 years in the wild, experts say. Callie spent a good part of her life at the Los Angeles Zoo, where she once was scheduled to be sent to a sanctuary in Tennessee because of her infirmities. But before the move could be completed, she was placed on loan at the San Francisco Zoo, where she was diagnosed with a human form of TB. Ultimately, she lived out her days in the often foggy and chilly zoo. And it goes on from there, but some of the important thing is really the larger issue of, you know, elephants in zoos and having enough space. I'm going to see if I can find a couple of key portions of the story about that. Activists say few, if any, zoos in the U.S. provide the kind of enclosed space that is adequate for these giant creatures that sometimes roam 30 to 50 miles a day in the wild. The enforced sedentary life in zoos leads to chronic disease and painful physical deterioration that culminates in premature death, they say. Because animals such as these cannot be returned to the wild, the only compassionate solution is to relocate them to sanctuaries, these animal rights advocates say. San Francisco Zoo has two enclosures, one about 17,000 square feet for its Asian elephants and another of about 10,000 square feet for its African species. Together, they comprise a little more than half an acre. Plans since shelved are in the works to expand both enclosures, they said. By comparison, the LA Zoo has slightly more than 2 acres, about 100,000 square feet, for its elephants, while the Oakland Zoo plans to double the size of its 2.5-acre enclosure in June. Quote, the problem of lack of space for elephants in zoos is irreconcilable, wrote Elliot Katz, a Mill Valley, California veterinarian and founder of In Defense of Animals, in an opinion piece for the San Francisco Chronicle published after Callie's death. The space allocated to elephants at the zoo, at the San Francisco Zoo, prevents normal exercise and forces them to stand on hard, dry, compacted surfaces, causing the arthritis and foot disease that have plagued Callie, Tinkerbell, Maybell, and Lulu. And it just goes on from there, but it's quite an interesting story, and of course it dovetails with some of the sanctuary conversations that we've had here, because one likely candidate for the two remaining elephants to be relocated to is one of the sanctuaries operated by PAWS, the Performing Animal Welfare Society's. And they're big sanctuaries, 2,300 acres in San Andreas, and it's really an amazing place. I was fortunate to see it a couple years ago, and in fact, we'll be going up there next week for another cool wildlife animal conference that they're holding at the sanctuary. But anyways, it's a story worth noting, whether it's this particular LA Times story or just the story generally about not only, you know, just that the Bay Area Zoo, the San Francisco Zoo, just decided it just couldn't really keep going with the elephants, and rightly so, with that kind of limited space, but just even the difficulty overall of having elephants in any kind of zoo setting, given that they need lots and lots of space. They roam, that's what they do. And so anyways, any thoughts on that? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I guess sort of bunching together a couple of unfortunate zoo stories. Not that we're completely against zoos. They have their value, their merits, but they are problematic in many, many ways as well if you love animals, as we do here at Talking Animals. So, this headline kind of says it all, I guess, but we'll get into a bit more beyond it. L.A. gorilla on loan to Atlanta Zoo found dead Caesar, a silverback gorilla loaned by the Los Angeles Zoo to Zoo Atlanta for breeding, was found dead Tuesday in his sleeping quarters, weeks after a successful public debut and a series of encounters with young female gorillas, Zoo Atlanta officials said. Zookeepers last saw Caesar alive at 2.05 p.m., alert and resting, on mend after a gastrointestinal problem he developed a week ago, according to the director of communications for Zoo Atlanta. And anyway, it goes on from there, but, you know, just really unfortunate. And there, later there was a follow-up story, and apparently this gastrointestinal thing was more serious than they initially realized, which I guess is hard to really detect in gorillas, even with really good veterinarian care, which apparently Caesar did have. But anyway, so very sorry to hear that, to read that. Meanwhile, one thing we haven't talked about in a while here in Talking Animals, but really, really important, and I hope just on an ongoing basis you'll keep this in mind. There's a really cool website called the Animal Rescue Site that you can go every day and click on a certain section, and that basically provides monies to feed animals or help pay for their care at various rescue facilities, you know, across the country. So let me give you that website. It's www.theanimalrescuesite.com. And then when you get there, just click on Feed an Animal in Need. And there's no catch. There's no wrinkle. There's no weird side to it. It's basically that corporate sponsors and advertisers have kind of used the exposure on the website in exchange for donating funds that, again, feed and help abandoned, neglected animals in exchange for that exposure. So definitely want to check that out. It's time now for our mid-animal news. True-false quiz. Just one question, true-false. First person who calls in with the correct answer gets a cool prize. And again, we're talking cool prizes here. What kind of cool prizes, the guy says? Somebody says? Somebody asked? Some fictional person asks? Well, we got all kinds of T-shirts from various animal organizations. We've got a copy of the Shirley MacLaine book, whose title escapes right now, but the really important part of that is that it was co-written by her dog. We've got lint rollers. We've got an Ian Anderson CD. Of course, Ian Anderson was a guest on the show a few months back, and there's a good number of animal songs on his Rupee's Dance CD. We also have a copy of the book For Bee, The Story of the Beagle Who Changed My Life by Kristen von Kreisler, also a guest on the show and a really cool book. We've got handcrafted necklaces with charms of an elephant or charms of a rattlesnake or a dolphin. We've got leashes. We've got safety collars. We've got stuffed toys, again, from various animal organizations. We've got a cool umbrella. I think there's other stuff, too. So keep that in mind when you're trying to decide if you want to play this quiz or later if you want to play Name That Animal Tune. I mean, we got some cool stuff. All right? So here we go. One question, true, false. First person to call in with the correct answer gets their choice of those prizes. Then the number here again, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, ready? Okay, here we go. There are 50 species of sea snakes, all highly venomous. The venom of a sea snake is as virulent as that of a cobra. Humans bitten by them have died within 2.5 hours. True or false? There are 50 species of sea snakes, all highly venomous. The venom of a sea snake is as virulent as that of a cobra. Humans bitten by them have died within 2.5 hours. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Resuming now with our news stories from our highly skilled rip-and-read news operation here at Talking Animals. Saw this, I guess, in Friday's paper. The California/Orange County section of the Los Angeles Times. And in the column by Dana Parsons, which, in an unnecessary bout of full disclosure, a friend of mine. But more to the point, the column was about this guy, Tom Dale, who was on the 55 on a few weeks back, bumper-to-bumper traffic, and he saw a cat. So what he did is he actually pulled his car over and rescued this cat amidst all that traffic, and sort of the point of the column was not only to let people know about that, but that he's got so many animals he can't, I guess, really I guess he's going to take the cat for the time, but I don't know that he's in the position to pay for, you know, spay neuter and other medical care, etc. So I guess he was sort of hoping that people, specifically people who had witnessed the incident on the 55, would cough up a dollar or two or just to help out with that. So it was pretty interesting. And also, the reason he did it, apparently, is that 25 years ago, he had a similar encounter in Newport Beach with a dog that wasn't rescued in time. I don't need to go into detail there, but I guess that just sort of was a fairly horrible memory for him. So I guess from that point forward, anytime he saw any animal in any kind of need or distress, he decided he would jump in. So kind of a cool story. And the cat's well, everything's fine, rescued fine, and just needs to be nursed back to health a little bit, and it'll be cool. All right, one or two quick more things to wrap up, and then we'll jump into the Comedy Corner and then hear our cool interview with Jean-Michel Cousteau. Just want to remind you that there's ongoing classes, or actually there's sort of more periodic than ongoing, in first aid and CPR for pets. We had Tawny Lee Thompson on the show several months ago, and she told us all about it, and it sounds really, really cool. It's just a one-day, four-hour class. The next one is May 23rd. And you learn about all different kinds of ways to care for your animals that you have that live with you that may have gotten injured, scratched, bitten, may have a breathing difficulty, et cetera, et cetera. So get a cool book about pet first aid and CPR. You get certified because this is under the auspices of the Red Cross. And it's pretty neat. So if you, the next ones are, again, May 23rd and then the following month, June 27th. Just Sunday for 4 hours, 1 to 5 p.m. It's in Huntington Beach off of Ellis. And if you want to find out more, it's 949-586-4250, 949-586-4250, and that's for either Trina or Tawny Lee herself. So that's that. And I think that may just do it for this edition of the Animal News. Of course, if there are ever any news stories or announcements, events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. What else? Love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs or comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site at www.talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks, .net. And sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of every single show we've done here at Talking Animals. How about that, folks? And assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around. The site again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. This is Robert Klein with the opening snippet of a piece called Animals All on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Our whole view of animals is entirely human. We see them in our own image. I don't want to shock anyone here, but there are chimpanzees in Africa that do not smoke cigars and roller skate. They're not named Jimmy and Jojo and Simba. And they don't ordinarily wear tuxedos and funny hats. Everything is anthropomorphic. We see everything through human terms. On a cockroach spray can, it says on the side of the can, spray underneath the sink, they like moisture. Since they can like and dislike, they dislike wide open, well-lit, dry spaces. They're bored by television. They love weddings. Cockroach. First of all, if you spray underneath the sink, they don't go underneath the sink. They're up in the cabin and attacking the Lorna Dunes. Can't spray the Lorna Dunes, you poison yourself.
All right, that's Robert Klein with the opening piece, opening moment, really, of a piece called Animals All. And that was taken from a CD entitled New Teeth. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps, arrived there through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California, Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest... is Jean-Michel Cousteau, and of course, son of Jacques Cousteau, and again, an accomplished explorer, environmentalist, educator, and filmmaker in his own right. Huge priority and passion for him these days is the Ocean Futures Society, a nonprofit marine conservation and education organization he founded in 1999. But he also continues to make films for PBS and other entities and pursue a number of other projects, including Water Cultures, a brand new book of absolutely just stunning, stunning photography, interviews, and sparse texts about all kinds of global water issues. So, in an interview recorded Wednesday, this is Jean-Michel Cousteau on Talking Animals here on KUCI.
Jean-Michel?
Yes, himself.
Hello, welcome to Talking Animals. Thank you so much for joining us today on the program.
Thank you very much.
We have so much history and so many projects, so many accomplishments to cover, but so we may need to, need to jump around a little chronologically. But let's dive in, so to speak.
Let's dive in. This is no pun, of course.
No. This is strictly interview language. But anyway, I think obviously a very good place to start would be to just tell us a little bit about launching the Ocean Future Society and when that happened and what its intent, mission, and purpose might be.
Well, after my father passed away in 97, it was obviously a very hard time for us, whether the only son remaining, and my family, my kids, and my late brother's children, and so on. So, we took a little step back and started to reflect on the meaning of the life that he had dedicated to a better understanding of the ocean and making the public more aware of the importance of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, because I worked most of my life along his side, I felt that the mission was not yet completely accomplished.
Sure.
And both to honor his work, his philosophy, and the accomplishments that he had made, I owed the public that supported us for so many decades to continue. And I created the Ocean Futures Society, which really is in the same spirit, the same goal as what we were doing before. And that leads us to continue to produce television programs. Things have changed. It's not the same as it was 20 years ago when you had 10 channels or 15 channels. Now you have 200.
Right, lots of competition.
And so, we're working with PBS. I'm very, very pleased. We used to do that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It happens that KQED is taking the lead on this up in San Francisco.
Right.
The philosophy of PBS fits our philosophy. And then we have major educational programs, perhaps a lot more than we used to, where with our Ambassador of the Environment program, we reach between 15 and 20,000 young people, children, coming out of school to a particular camp. And we do that on Catalina. We do that up in Northern California. We do it on the Big Island of Hawaii. We have programs starting in the Cayman Islands, in the British Virgin Islands, in Puerto Rico, in Spain, in France, and soon in Italy.
And these are
that being shared worldwide.
And these are all locations where youngsters can go and
yes.
Wow. And how?
Yes, we encourage the schools, private and of course public particularly, to make it part of their program during the year when they do outings and they come to those sites with their teachers and they are exposed to the marine environment, to the aquatic environment and the importance that it represents and how connected we are to the ocean. Even if we don't live by the ocean, way inland. We completely dependent on the ocean for the weather, for the water we drink, for the snow on the top of the mountains, and on and on and on.
Sure. And it, what age range is this? Kids of all different ages that can attend?
Oh, usually from fifth grade on.
Great. Well, and given some of those locations, I'd certainly like to volunteer to be a chaperone. Those sound like some pretty wonderful trips and locations that you guys
Well, go with your local schools and have them join us.
Great.
They can find out all about our Ambassador of the Environment program on our website, oceanfutures.org.
Okay.
And they can ask questions. We do answer when people connect with us, and people can even be members. It is free, completely free on the internet.
Yeah, it's a great website, by the way. I mean, it's really just
Thank
packed
you.
With great information, and it's very
Thank
easy
very
to sort of navigate around. So by all means, that's oceanfutures.org. And also, isn't another sort of big part of the Ocean Futures Society just continuing efforts in conservation that you've obviously been involved with for you know, years and years and years?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And besides the fact that we try to let the public learn more about how dependent we are on the environment for the quality of our lives,
mm-hmm.
At the same time, we want to make them more personally responsible, taking responsibility into our everyday act of stopping using the ocean as a garbage can,
right?
Which literally comes with everyday's little action. When you drop something on the ground, whether it's your cigarette butt or it's your beer can or it's whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
it ends up in the ocean.
Yeah,
it goes into the water system, whether it's streams, rivers, lakes, and ultimately into the ocean. So it really benefits no one, and it makes it difficult for marine life at the same time, and we gain nothing of it. So we have to recycle, we have to store away, we have to make sure that we don't dispose of our everyday material the way we do it today.
Yeah.
So it's re-education. At the same time, we partner with the manufacturers, with the industries who are extremely open today into doing a better job, into helping educate their manufacturers and the public at large. So partnership is becoming more and more a thing that will help resolve some of those issues. And then finally, what Dad and I, we did always is to sit down with our decision makers, wherever they are in the U.S. or other countries, and tell them about some of those issues, which most of the time they're really not aware of.
Yeah.
And try to find solutions together. And we have succeeded in so many situations that I can say it's worth doing it no matter what.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter whose side you're on, what political party you belong to. That is not the issue. The environment is for everybody.
Absolutely. And as you're suggesting, I mean, often it's more about ignorance than indifference or sort of willful neglect. So educating politicians and everyone else is crucial to...
most of the time people will say, oh, I didn't know.
Right.
Well, this is it.
Yeah,
so
now here's your chance to know.
Job.
Yeah. And who would you say kind of stands, particularly sort of shoulder to shoulder with you at the forefront of some of these ocean conservation efforts?
Well, I call it action partnership.
Okay.
For because you cannot be an expert in everything.
Right.
So for a given issue, a given problem, let's say in the case of low-frequency sound that are emitted underwater for the defense system of the nation, the consequences of those tests have been proven now scientifically as being very dramatic on what it does to certain marine mammals, particularly
mm-hmm.
whales and dolphins.
Right.
It can and has killed them.
Sure.
So we had to... We had to team up with people who really knew what this was all about, like Natural Resource Defense Council or NRDC, or IFA or the Humane Society. I mean, there are a number of organizations who have focused their research, their resources into these fields.
Mm-hmm.
So we team up with them.
Sure.
And we try to work with the Navy, and it's not just the U.S. There are many other countries that are doing the same thing, and said, hold on, we have a problem. Let's try to resolve that problem together.
Right.
And so action partnership to me is critical because
All right, well, let's hope we can get a little past that.
Seemed like such a good idea at the time to burn this interview to disc. Maybe it still is. Let's give it another shot. Let's try to resume our interview with Jean-Michel Cousteau here on Talking Animals, KUCI.
The expert at everything.
Of course.
So on a given issue, you team up with the best.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, just because where we're talking to you from is you know, right near the California coastline, and of course one of your camps location you referred to is Catalina Island. So let me just ask you this: if you're sort of given carte blanche, you know, just hypothetically to improve the California coastline or just the overall situation here, what are say the two or three most important things you would do, or what would you do first?
I would have a massive information made available to the public to eliminate the damage we do through runoff.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, is that the biggest threat? Is that the biggest problem at the moment?
I think
in this area?
It is. Yeah. In California, yes. Mm-hmm. And then I would also instantly protect and to some extent restore some of the coastal habitats. Coastal habitats, which are the wetlands, the estuaries, all of those are so critical for marine life to reproduce, to find protection, for predators to find food, and also for all kinds of species of birds that either need to nest there or need those resting places during their migration.
Yeah.
So habitats should be... You know, again, from a purely economical point of view, mm-hmm. habitats are so valuable that we can't touch them. It is a criminal act, in my view, to touch habitats. An acre of coastal habitat will bring to the economy of the nation many more times than whatever we do with it, whether it's to build a parking lot or restaurants along the coastline. That will never, never compensate the economical value that a coastal habitat brings to the economy of the nation.
Yeah.
Or the world.
Right. So, you say it's a criminal act. I mean, so would one of your ideas then, with this sort of hypothetical that I posed, be to make it more, you know, give the penalties more teeth for people who are?
I think the legislation should be stronger. The Coastal Commission, which has a very strong mission, should be perhaps given even more authorities to protect the coast of California.
Yeah,
definitely.
Sure. And also just kind of looking at sort of various accomplishments and accolades in recent years, I found it interesting at the time, and then in preparing for this interview, that you were the first person to represent the environment in the opening ceremony of the 2002 Olympic Games. What does that mean exactly, and what form did that take?
Well, it really means besides the honor, which was given me to carry the flag at the opening ceremony of the Olympics on behalf of the environment, it really means that the international body, in a peaceful way, was recognizing, in addition to arts, sports, the fact that the environment is a critical issue, including for all those athletes. And the Salt Lake City had not only understood that, but taken some very, very strong measures in order to be an example of good stewardship when it comes to the environment, doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And I hope that message will be carried on again and again and again. You know, the Olympics, between the winter and summer Olympics happen every 2 years.
Sure.
Let's make sure that this message doesn't go away.
Right.
It's very, very important. And the people who had the foresight to introduce the environment as part of this introduction of not only the continents, but the art, the sport, and the environment had major foresight, and I'm very grateful, and we should not drop it. We should continue.
Right. Well, I guess two things there. One is that I guess it's important to point out that sharing a similar honor at those games were such folks as Desmond Tutu, John Glenn, Lech Walesa, Steven Spielberg. So you were certainly in stellar company, as you should be. But also, I believe, in terms of your point about, you know, carrying forth, I think you're also on some sort of environmental foundation for the Athens Olympic Games.
Yes, you know when you get involved in those things, you don't know where it's going to take you. And you put the finger in this thing, and then pretty soon your arm is in it, and the rest of your body follow.
Right.
So they following what happened in Salt Lake City, they created the Athens Environmental Foundation and asked me to serve on the board, which I do.
Sure.
And we're going to have major events taking place in planting trees along the route of the flame.
Oh, great.
In all the cities where the Olympics have taken place in the past, during the modern Olympics. And we also have a big event in June, which will precede the Olympics, where we're going to go and, with the help of the dive clubs of the region, with the help of the municipality, and with the help of the Greek Navy, we're going to clean up part of the sea in front of Athens and in the vicinity of all the debris that have been put into the ocean.
Wow.
And it's going to be very spectacular, because we're going to remove out of there automobiles, baby strollers, refrigerators, I mean, massive pieces of equipment, which requires major equipment like cranes to lift all of that up.
Sure.
And then we're going to bring it back on land. And the municipalities are going to either recycle some of it, like metal, or they're going to dispose of it in places where it is contained and kept from being able to go back to the sea.
Wow, well, that sounds fantastic. And so even if some of the people seem to be quite concerned that, you know, there may not be a stadium completed in time and some other actual parts of the Olympics, at least there'll be some truly impressive...
I'm amazed. the stadium will be completed.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's always at every Olympic, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The minute the first visitor or the first athletes enter any of these places,
yeah.
You'll have a bunch of guys sweeping out on the way out, just 50 feet ahead of the first visitor.
Sure,
so
sure.
It has
yeah.
always been that way, and it will
right.
never
no,
change.
It's always down to the wire. I guess the only thing
that
might
right.
be different this year is just the added element of, you know, just security and those things. But, yeah,
that's
but this
right.
sounds fantastic.
But, you know, what we're doing there with the foundation
mm-hmm.
Is very important because it shows that in this particular case, and it can be repeated over and over, and it doesn't have to be the Olympics, we work together with industries, we work together with municipalities, we work together with decision makers. It is partnering with people who mean well.
Mm-hmm.
They most of the time they didn't know, they had no idea.
Right.
Now you inform them and they said, oh, what can I do?
Sure. No, it's right back
and
to
that's
the...
what we're doing at Ocean Futures. We have teamed up with the plastic industry through the Plastic Council. We're supporting their clean sweep program. We're teaming up with Pacific Life, which is doing a great job of initiating this concept of protecting whales, which is very timely with the gray whales migration going on at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And by teaming up with people who can make a difference, I think we are in a position to allow every individual to have better access to better materials so we, the consumers, we make better decisions on an everyday basis.
Absolutely.
And at the end of the day, you save money,
yeah.
you save your health, you save the economy of your country. I mean, there's a lot of good things that are coming out of it, and we should be proud of doing it.
Absolutely. There's tremendous virtues, and like you say, it's just a matter of educating people.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Did I lose you?
No, I still hear you.
Okay.
Are you still hearing me okay?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
I hear you very
good.
Well.
Good, good, good. So, yeah, so, I mean, actually, another, this sort of brings me to another thing about sort of the founding of the Ocean Future Society, because I found a passage, I think it might have been on the website, in fact, in your biographical material, about responding to your father's call to, quote, carry forward the flame of his faith, which I thought was kind of cool, just as a quote. But also, you know, often the sons of sort of great and famous men take various paths to kind of step out of their father's shadow. I'm wondering, was there ever any point where you felt that you needed to do that, or did you always sort of embrace your father's work and legacy?
You know, I just finished writing a book which will come on the U.S. market next year in spring, where precisely I explained this relationship.
Mm.
And my dad was such an extraordinary, I'll say teacher. He so much opened my eyes on the environment, on the beauty of it. And when he put a mask on me and pushed me overboard when I was 7 years of age with a tank on my back together with my mom and my late brother,
mm-hmm.
we were so privileged
yeah.
to, in those days, I'm talking about the 50s, so you're talking about 50-some years ago.
Sure.
And it wasn't even the 50s, as far as I'm concerned, it was in the 40s, it was in 1945, I was 7 years of age.
Wow.
And I never had second thoughts about what I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
but I had a profound respect for the man, and all these years I worked with him, I was always one step behind.
Sure.
I was there to help, assist, learn,
mm-hmm.
and share, and now that he has left us, there's nobody in front of me, so... Obviously,
I've
become a little more visible, and
sure.
and that's why Ocean Futures Society was created, to honor his work, to continue in the same destination, same frame, same philosophy,
mm-hmm.
and I'll never stop until I'm switched off.
Right. And with that story about him sort of, you know, tossing you overboard at age seven, I mean, did you take an immediate liking to the water? Did you just love the sea from that very first moment?
The answer is yes. You know, it was our life.
Mm-hmm.
It was our way of life.
Sure.
Every weekend, every holiday, perhaps instead of going skiing or doing other things, we were in the water. We were like fish.
Right.
And we loved it. We enjoyed every minute of it. And these many decades of exposure have allowed me to find out that we were hurting that environment by using it literally as a garbage can. And our whole mission has been to enlighten ourselves, the public, to make sure they realize what we're doing to ourselves.
Yeah.
Most people don't know. And when they find out, they said, oh, I didn't know. And they immediately want to take action. I mean, the majority of people have good intentions. But
sure.
If they don't know, you know, here we are. So
yeah.
The opportunity that you're giving us on your program, the ability and possibility we have to be on television again and again, all of that contribute in a civic way to better harm the public to make better decisions.
Sure. And so it sounds like really your passion for the water, for the sea, has never waned, even though at times, obviously, it sounds like you've been, you know, of course, discouraged by, you know, these findings or certain incidents, Exxon Valdez, things like this must have, you know, certainly hit you at least as hard as the rest of us, just given your connection to the sea.
Well, yes. I mean, at the end of the day, you said, oh, I this is so monumental.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What to do. Yeah.
And then the next morning you wake up and you're pumped up and you're ready to go and plug in. Or you look in the face of a five-year-old and say, I'm not going to let you down.
Sure.
And you just go and plug again.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great motivation to continue. You know, I've had my disagreement with my dad on what priorities and how to handle things, you know, everybody has, but it was in a constructive way.
Yeah.
It was not meant as disagreeing for the principle of disagreeing. It was, well, I believe this is more important than this.
Sure.
No, I don't. And then in the end, when he was around, he was the boss.
He wins those arguments.
Decision.
Yeah, that's right.
But everyone had extremely good intentions and it continues and it will never stop.
Yeah. And how many days at this point, Jean-Michel, in a given month, are you in the water?
Not enough, but enough to recharge my batteries every time I go there.
Yeah.
I was on the water, not in the water, the last 5 days up in the San Francisco or in the Monterey Bay area, since we're doing a show. And we were down your way not very long ago because we went down to Baja California. We tagged four mother whales and with satellite tags. And the objective of this show is, which is called the Gray Whale Obstacle Course, is to follow them as far as they go on their migration. So we're following these whales, and right now we're in the Monterey Bay.
Oh, wow.
And then next, in 2 weeks from now, we'll be in Oregon and the state of Washington. And then later on, we'll be on Vancouver Island and Southeast Alaska.
Oh, wow. So you really are tracking them. Yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, having been down once to San Ignacio, to the lagoon there, I mean, it's just an amazing...
Well, we were there, too.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's probably the starting point, yeah. So, that's cool. Where do you live now, Jean-Michel, or do you sort of divide your time among, you know, a few locations?
Well, other than being on an airplane all the time...
Right.
They love me.
Sure.
My home base is Santa Barbara in California.
Oh, okay.
And up the coast from you, and we have an office in Paris, in France, and then we have another office in Italy. And this will expand probably in the future. They all Ocean Futures Europe. And as soon as the European Union has its not-for-profit legislation adopted at the European Parliament, we will have a one organization under the auspices of the European Union, which as of the first of this month represents 25 countries.
Man, all right. Well, that sounds like you're just continue to grow and expand and reach further. We just have a couple more minutes, Jean-Michel, but I think we'd be remiss to not talk at least briefly about water culture, which for readers who, listeners who may not know, it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous sort of a, I guess, a sort of a coffee table book featuring just an array of stunning images from, I guess, dozens of world-class photographers, but all about, you know, water and aquatic sort of images, but also featuring interviews with Gorbachev, yourself, Robert Kennedy, others, and it's just a stunning, stunning book. What was sort of the impetus for water culture?
Well, the emphasis is to give a chance for the public to look at the importance of water, the beauty of it, what it means to every one of us, what does it mean to others who are not as lucky as we are around the world. So there's the extraordinary beauty, and at the same time, some of the dramatic situations which hundreds of millions of people are faced with when you don't have water, when you don't have quality water, and all of that is articulated in a very, very elegant way in this book.
Yeah.
And I was extremely pleased to be an important part of the making of the book with my team.
Sure.
And people who are interested can find it on Amazon.com. They probably can find it in some bookstores, and they certainly can communicate with Ocean Futures on our website, oceanfutures.org, and we will indicate to the people who have questions where to find the answers about that and or about anything else, by the way. And
Sure.
They can become members if they want. It is free. That's why I'm very relaxed in saying this, because I didn't want young people to have to ask money for their parents. So we decided, okay, membership is free.
Sure. Can't beat that deal. And also, Jean-Michel, isn't it, if I'm not mistaken, aren't the proceeds, or at least some of the proceeds from the sales of water culture, go to help Ocean Futures and maybe other organizations as well?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And nobody was paid to do this job.
Yeah, well, and I just can't emphasize how this book is just gorgeous and just an array of beautiful, beautiful images, and these interviews are fantastic. And then also, the other thing I thought was really sort of cool and effective was, apart from the interviews, there's just very, very minimal text, but it's really important points like one point I saw something said, nearly 1 billion people depend on fish as their primary source of protein, yet some 70% of marine fisheries are overexploited. And then a different page, just a little similar thing. In the USA, nearly half of all coastal waters are still too polluted for swimming and fishing or to support aquatic life. So, I mean, these are very, you know, simple. They're not, you know, dramatic. They're just very small on the page alongside a gorgeous image. But, I mean, the totality of it, I think, is just a really a fantastic book. So I hope
you... Well, I'm glad you like it, and you are being so kind in making very important references to the meaning of this book. I mean, it had, besides being beautiful and spectacular, it had to convey a message.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's sort of, it's gorgeous on its own level, but it also seems to be an educational, tool of great power, and then also, of course, a fundraising element as well. So, you know, can't beat that combination given all your work and what's going to be the outcome of this. So, Jean-Michel Cousteau, I guess we've sort of reached the end of our time, but I really appreciate you joining us today on Talking Animals, and keep up.
You're very, very kind, and we'll do it anytime you want.
All right. Well, thank you, and keep up your great, great work.
Thank you again.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now.
Again, we want to thank Jean-Michel Cousteau for joining us today on Talking Animals, and apologize for the brief
glitch. Thank God it was only brief, because looked a little dicey there for a moment, but we muddled through. So anyway, again, the website for the Ocean Futures Society is oceanfutures.org. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kci.org. It's time now to proceed to name that animal tune. Again, this is pretty much like any version of name that tune you care to imagine, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So I'll play a snippet of this tune. There'll be a prize. That's right, a prize. Damn right, buckaroo. For the first caller who correctly identifies the song and artist, and today we'll even make it easier. You can just tell me the animal that's referred to or that's part of the title, and that's going to be sufficient to win a prize. As long as you're the first person to call in, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. Okay, let's get started. It's Talking Animals, KUCI. Can anybody name that animal too? All right. Well, I'm Duncan Strauss. We've just about reached the end of this week's edition. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, if you do think of it, or think of at least the animal that's referred to in it. That's sufficient. How about that? Come on. So, I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, the University of California Board of Regents. And I want to again thank our guest. Jean-Michel Cousteau for joining us today on Talking Animals. Again, the website is oceanfutures.org. Also want to thank you all for listening and for the phone calls we meant to receive. People meant to call, didn't they? That's right. I hope you join us next week on Talking Animals when our tentatively scheduled guest, at least, is Tammy Grimes, founder of Dogs Deserve Better, a national education, legislation, and rescue organization dedicated to freeing chain and penned dogs and bring them inside, bring them in the home. Hope you join us for that next week, Monday, May 17th, on Talking Animals. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KCI include, just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's a great public affairs program and talk shows just like this virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning. Then again, from 5 to 6 in the afternoon on the music side of this KUCI schedule. I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. So when you have a chance, please check it out. And again, I urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list. We can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email with comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, and anything else you like. It's talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI coming up momentarily. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good week, and please be kind to animals, be kind to others, be kind to yourself. As always, we're going to close things out with an animal related tune, and sort of as a final nod to our chat with Jean-Michel Cousteau, this is brand new music from Matthew Sweet with a song called The Ocean In Between. And we'll catch you next week on Talking Animals here on KUCI in Irvine.
Come on. I knew every little thing about you.
this is Knockout Greg from Knockout Greg and Blue Weather. And you're listening to Jeff Scott, infecting you with the blues disease.
Don't run home to me, 'cause I'm a-